So far, it's been pretty much smooth sailing on the General Assembly's 10-week voyage we like to call the 2024 short session. But then again, that's what they said about the minnow when it embarked on that fateful three-hour tour. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll seek to chart the course for the remainder of the session with the General Assembly's four caucus leaders. So, welcome aboard, Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. Pop quiz. What's the most powerful position in state government? Now, most folks, I'm guessing, would say governor, and with good reason. Governors, among other things, possess the life and death power to grant pardons. They appoint the state's top judges, and they serve as commander-in-chief of the state's armed forces. Now, I would submit to you, though, that unless you're an inmate seeking a last-minute reprieve, a lawyer with an all-consuming desire to be an appellate judge, or some loyal Hoosier trying to fend off an attack from, say, Kentucky, you'd probably want to cast your lot with the leaders of the Indiana General Assembly, especially the Speaker of the House and the Senate's President Pro Tem. After all, governors might execute laws, but those laws are enacted by members of the General Assembly. And to carry this civics lesson one step further, what those members do and don't get to consider is largely up to my guests. House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican. Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican. House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat. And Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. Mr. Speaker, let's start with you. I've seen you quoted once, 10 times, 100 times in recent days that you say the goal here is get in, get out, no harm, no foul, be done. And yet I've spent the past couple days at the General Assembly talking to many members, and I'm reminded that they are passionate about things that aren't on anybody's caucus agenda. How do you reconcile the desire to get out fast with what appears to be a pent-up demand on the part of members of bills that no media outlet has talked about, really?
Yeah, I think it's a short session, so we have a limited amount of time. I always remind our members that we literally, you know, the bills that we enacted last year haven't even been in effect for 6 months before we come back. So, you know, there's some fine-tuning that needs to be done. We certainly will address a whole host of issues serious to Hoosiers across the state, issues serious to the members of our caucuses. But, you know, it's a short session. The original intent of the short session was for emergency items, and we want to get back to having short sessions that are focused on just a few things and not over-encompassing. You know, we have a long session every year or every 2 years to do the budget, and that's where we flush out so much, and we had a tremendous long session last year in 2023. And so we just want to get back to the intent of the short session.
Again, I was talking to a lot of your members who were talking about bills. I can't stress enough that nobody else, at one point, half a day into this, the most popular bill that had been cited most often was about FEMA floodplain maps as opposed to anything that media tend to talk about. How do you deal with that when you're trying to figure out how to put everything through that little funnel?
Well, first of all, the speaker's right. It's just short sessions. We have to keep that in perspective, not dealing with the budget. But keep in mind that, you know, our members have things that are super important to them, also super important to their districts. Those floodplain maps have significant impacts on people and whether or not they need to pay flood insurance on their home, and sometimes that's exorbitantly expensive, of course. So never mistake what the Speaker and I have both said about the short session. In fact, in the Senate, we've limited our bills to 5 per senator, which is smaller than we've done in the past. But it doesn't mean we're not going to do some important things. There's several important things we'll have to debate and work on this year.
Well, Phil Giaquinta, again, same question. You know, when we hear caucus agendas, I guess you have the luxury of, since you're in a super minority and you may not get bills heard anyway, you can shoot for the sky. Is this a chance to sort of try to differentiate Democratic caucus in the House from your counterparts?
Well, while we're limited on time, we certainly aren't limited on very important issues that are facing our constituents. Whether the past summer or even really over the past couple of years, there have been several issues that have been brought to my attention, all of our attention. And so I think we really need to, you know, recognize those things and get to work. And we can use the time that we're here to work on those. We recognize that property taxes are too high. Child care access is difficult. The cost to send your child to child care is very expensive. We've worked on and tried to address the issue of health care costs. We certainly recognize that as well. When we talk about child care, again, this is issues that this isn't the first session that we've talked about it. It's been in the last couple of years. Someone reminded me the other day, when it's more expensive to send your child to a public university than it is to child care, that's a problem. And it's affecting Hoosier families across the state. So there's a variety of and many issues that I think that are affecting Hoosier's pocketbook, and we need to get to work on those while we're here.
When people say the best thing we can do for you Hoosiers is get here, do no harm, and get out the door, does that send a message that you guys are like a bad case of the flu, that the less we have to put up with you, the better? I mean, it's interesting because you're doing the people's work. You're sure. Doing – so how do you say – how come nobody ever says, yeah, we're here and we're going to be stay here as long as we can to do as much as we can for you?
Well, for all of us, it's a matter of perspective. For me, it's, I'm usually on a defensive posture, so I'm always trying to make sure that we are there to give some the other side of the issue in a lot of cases. But I take this as an opportunity to actually coalesce with my colleagues in the Senate on the other side of the aisle and hopefully we'll have a lot of pieces of legislation that we can actually coalesce around, make life better for all Hoosiers across the state of Indiana. And I think that that's what we can try to do in the Senate.
All right.
Well, John, I think, to Leader G. Aquinas' points, Senator Brain, Senator Taylor's points, I mean, I think we will touch on a large number of issues. We'll address many of the issues that Leader G. Aquinas outlined. I mean, and then also, in our state, we do a budget every 2 years, and the short session is also an opportunity to flush and begin to flush through issues that we will actually, deal with in the budget session of 2025. So, this is it's a continuous process, whether you're in session or whether you're talking to constituents or whether you're in summer study committees, to continue to seek input and to get legislation in the right spot to be able to move.
This were needed a literary metaphor. It's by chapters, but there's a lot of foreshadowing
exactly
about what comes next. We're going to have a break here in a minute, but before we get there, let's talk education. If I had to quiz you, I'm guessing you'd all may say some kind of education reform. But now education improvement is in the eye of the beholder. It could be in teacher accountability. It could be more pay for teachers. It could be more teachers. It could be more parent involvement. Give me your 10 seconds or 30 seconds on education, what do we need to do?
So the most important thing I think that you'll see the Senate work on this year is reading proficiency. We all can recognize that kids by third grade need to be able to read. Vitally important that they're able to read.
The thought is now as many as 1 in 5 cannot.
That's level, exactly right. And that's if you look at iRead. And iRead, keep in mind, iRead isn't meaning you're at the top of your game in reading. It is a base level of reading. And we've got about 20% of their kids that aren't there. And so we're going to make sure that through second grade and third grade that we are analyzing those kids, making sure they understand, recognizing the ones that are having trouble, and getting them more remediation through second grade, through the summer of second grade if need be, third grade and the summer of third grade. And so we're putting a lot of our resources, a lot of our ideas into making sure that those kids are reading by the time they finish third grade. And because I think we all know the fate of a child who's not reading by the time they leave third grade and go to fourth grade is unfortunately not very bright, and there's 20% of those. That's way too big of a percentage. We need to work on.
There might be a lawmaker, not pointing fingers somewhere, that would say you just hold them in that third grade no matter what, and even if they're driving themselves to school and shaving on the way, they're still going to be in third grade. That's hyperbole, but there is a sort of a punitive flavor to some of this. So, yeah. Bill G. Quinta, how do you to balance that with the notion that these are probably kids that are not reading because they're not getting what they need from first grade to second grade?
Well, or really before that, I'm glad to hear Senator Bray talk about what we can do resource-wise, help kids in second grade or after second grade during that summer as they enter third grade. But let's go back even before that. When we talk about pre-K, we've danced around the edges, if you will, with a pilot program and a statewide program, but we still really don't have a real robust pre-K program in the state, in my opinion. We have areas, deserts, if you will, of pre-K deserts where folks just, there is no access to pre-K. We have other programs out there with pre-K that's just too expensive. Study after study will show you that more kids that get into pre-K will do so much better. And a Purdue study recently that came out said suggests that they do much better on the iRead tests. And so those are things. So let's start with getting kids.
You said about non-budget, no open to budget.
Let's start. Let's be serious about this and think about, you know, what can we do to make sure that kids are getting early childhood education, because it's going to be so much better in the long run, particularly with third grade reading scores.
And what is the answer then? If the budget's not open, when I don't think you guys have changed your minds about that, there might be some dollars here and there. But for the most part, how do you solve a problem like that?
Well, I have to agree with my colleague from the House in the fact that we could have seen this coming. I actually predicted this back in 2011 when we were doing our, you know, kind of mixing and matching the public school dollars with the traditional public schools, charter schools, and now the larger school district in the state, the voucher program. We predicted we were going to have some problems down the road. And for me, it's kind of the chickens coming home to roost. We have to understand that if a child can't, we all agree, if a child can't read in third grade, we can predict their future. I think that's something we can all agree upon. So if we start with that premise and we start implementing some of these public school policies that we should have done a long time ago, I've had the same bill that makes the compulsory age 5 years old in Indiana. We're putting those kids behind the eight ball if we say they only have to start school. They're only compelled to start school at seven.
I need to make a quick point
here.
All
right, real quick, and then we're going to grade your answers in the first segment while I take a quick break here.
You're talking about the issue of money and suggesting maybe we're not putting enough money into it. Let me just run through a couple of figures here. We added to the budget of our K through 12 education in 2019, $763 million new dollars. In 2021, $1.1 billion new dollars on top of those $763 before that. And then the 23 budget, $1.5 billion, depending on how you count it. So the dollars that we put into public education is not the problem here. This is just needs to be a focus that we're making sure that these kids are getting the attention they need.
All right. We'll take a little break. Just catch our breath. As I say, grade the answers for the first part of the quiz here today. You know, we talk about the stories and what matters, but another aspect of this is how things become law, essentially the process. I think you guys could pass that test, but let's take a quick break and look at that.
Just like we learned in Schoolhouse Rock, it can be quite a journey for a bill to reach the governor's desk. And even then, there's no guarantee that it will actually become law. Here's what that process looks like in the Indiana State House. Before a bill reaches the governor's desk, it must survive three readings or clearly defined stages in the chamber where it's introduced, and then repeat the same three-part process in the other chamber. Lots of proposals never get out of the gate, and those that do can die at any point along the way. Bills that make it through the General Assembly still aren't a done deal, as they can be vetoed by the governor. Of course, vetoes can be overridden by a simple legislative majority, that is at least 51 votes in the House and 26 votes in the Senate. Tune in each week as we break down the year's session by the numbers and answer your questions about the process.
Before we leave education, what needs to be dealt with this session for it to be a success?
Well, I think one of the great success stories of last year was House Bill 1002, a work-based learning program that recognizes that at least half the students graduating from Indiana high schools aren't going to go to a traditional two or four-year public university or private university after high school. And to make sure kids have high-quality work-based learning experiences in high school so they're prepared for the careers. And, you know, we've had tremendous partners in the business community and the trade unions and all across the sector saying we want to help these kids have work-based learning experiences that help them understand the type of careers that are available to them and the different pathways to get to those careers. So that was a huge bill last year, a bipartisan bill. This year we have House Bill 1001 that continues to build on that and continues to make sure we provide all kids with a meaningful high school education.
Does anybody think that's not the way to go? I know Ed Delaney, a state rep from Indianapolis, in these state house interviews, was very adamant saying he thinks this is discouraging or sending a message, or maybe not even a subtle message, that kids shouldn't go to college, or basically forcing them out before they are mature enough to know what their decisions should be. Anybody share that concern?
Well, I think that, and Representative Delaney's made this concern as well, that when you look at the school counselor ratio, I think we're last in the country with the number
so
of school counselors that we have.
Well, I think in terms of picking a vocational, a trade versus.
Exactly. I mean, I think school counselors with the guidance counselors provide a great service for students working those through those different options, as you will, whether or not to attend college or other what the other options are. So I think that's one thing that we really do need to focus on. And as we continue to work on 1001 now, get the numbers mixed up a little bit, but and there's some other things too with regards to I think age, you know, trying to get into the trades or some discrepancy there on age, the age of students, things like that. But the school counselor issue is a big one.
Greg Taylor, before we leave education, weigh in.
Yeah, we've got to again. My colleagues talk about the amount of money that we put into education over the last 3 years. I agree. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. But where you put those dollars is very important. When you increase some programs' funding by 80% and other programs go up by 5%, you kind of see in numbers where your priorities lie. As far as this work-based learning, I agree with my colleagues. We've got to find some options for these kids to actually have a career later on in their life and make enough money to take care of a family. But we have to be careful that we don't guide certain students one way and other students another way. And that's one of the things that I'm kind of apprehensive about. So fixing the counselor to student ratio should be a priority. And we got to have social workers too, because, you know, these children and their families have usually come from backgrounds where they're going to need services as well as career counseling and other things.
I do think the idea that you watch more, if you talk to Hoosier families and you go talk to the parents, you talk to kids, they want options available to them,
right.
Meaningful options that prepare. And the idea that we're lowering a standard, frankly, is just wrong. You know, these programs are getting kids certificates and certifications in high-need, high-demand job areas and high-wage jobs. So it's not, you know, there's nothing about this that's discouraging kids from going to a 2 or 4 year school. It's saying the pathway to that associate's degree, the bachelor's degree, can include, and then certain times must include, a certification or a credential to get there. And so, like, no one wants to lower any standard. Matter of fact, I would frankly say we're increasing the standards, but we're recognizing that the education of today is different than the education that we all experience. And it needs to be more relevant. It needs to be more, skills-focused, not content-focused. And I think, you know, post-pandemic, as more parents got a chance to see what their kids were learning, they were asking the obvious question I think a lot of us have asked is, how often did I use what I learned?
Well, and everything we've talked about so far, certainly it's under the heading of education reform, but again, that's a matter of definition. It's in the eye of the beholder. For some people, that's not the important education reform. It's what we heard toward the end of last session. Parents need to be more in the classroom. You need to pay more about what kids are being taught in terms of subjects that maybe some would say aren't appropriate for younger kids in terms of being too sexual in nature, or too provocative. How is that going to come back, those kinds of issues? I guess we call them the culture war. We'll lump them under that heading. Or is this going to be a session that actually stays on truancy, reading, writing, and arithmetic in the classic sense?
We're going to talk mostly about making sure the kids are proficient in reading and making sure that truancy obviously has become an issue because, there are school buildings in our state where one out of every two kids are considered chronically truant. So I think we've all just taken our eye off that ball a little bit, so we need to make sure we focus on it. We've got some legislation that we'll kind of work through and see if we can get something that makes sense to pass, but at the very least, it's a really important conversation to have. Those are what you'll see us spend most of our time.
And I'm no expert on the subject, but I'm guessing there might be a correlation between people who aren't proficient at third grade and people who might not be sitting in the classroom.
Absolutely.
Just a wild crazy
so.
Guess.
Yeah.
We talked a little K-12. Before we leave the subject, let's talk post-secondary education, anti-Semitism, the campus, the concern, thanks to the headlines that we've been seeing and reading around the world. That's an issue. Does that warrant consideration, Phil Giaquinta?
There's a bill that was working its way through the House. It was.
And this would basically make afford more protection or make anti-Semitism basically a more clearly defined problem on campuses and force the hand. Do you find a lot of the people who are most zealous in advocacy of this, or some of the, I couldn't help but notice, are some of the same people who were brought kicking and screaming to the table on hate crimes legislation, for instance, when the governor, you eventually did pass something, but not as some would say watered down version, but the governor wanted something, you gave him something. But before that, we were one of 5 states that didn't have any hate crimes legislation. How come we're here where we are now, Greg Taylor, and we weren't back then? What's going on?
Well, let's remember that when we did some semblance of a what a bias crimes would be. It was the impetus behind that was actually desecration of a synagogue in Carmel. Listen, these isms have been around since before we were born. We're not going to fix them overnight. We're not going to fix them by defining, in my opinion, defining one ism over another ism. Racism has been around as much as anti-Semitism has been around. And I find it ironic that we're going to be sitting here in the legislative session saying in the education area, this is what you can't say, otherwise you are this. Well, we could do that about a lot of things. Got a lot of homophobia. We've got a lot of racism. Where are we going to stop? Where are we going to stop the ball from rolling down the hill? And it actually gives me cause for concern.
I'm so tempted to go down that path because we could talk hours about that. But I know
yes.
We are out short on time, and there are other issues on the table. Quickly, let's go around. What's else on your front burner?
We've obviously working on a whole series of issues, as Senator Bray noted. Both caucuses are aligned on child care issues. Both caucuses are going to continue to work on
even though the budget won't
health care
issues.
Might be
some ways
to
make more people eligible.
Absolutely, make more people eligible. I think we created a process. I think with good intent, but we've so regulated it, John, that we just eliminated the number of providers. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised when government overextends and creates so many barriers for people to even open a child care that guess what? We don't have enough seats available.
And we only have about 50% of the total seats we need.
That's
the
right.
State at once.
But we're going to deal with issues. We'll deal with the floodplain issues, the map issues. We'll deal with a whole series of issues like we always do.
We're leaving the 13th check.
We're going to leave the 13th check.
That seems to be picking up speed.
Yeah.
That was basically just helping out senior, or I suppose they're all seniors, I don't know, by definition, but they're state employees who retired that weren't getting that additional income. How about you, Rod Bray? What have we not talked about that we should?
Well, I just focus on, you mentioned it already, but daycare is really important when you'll see us focus on that. It's going to be an important priority bill for us. And a couple of other things with regard to some health care costs. We've worked on that already. And in large part, as the speaker referenced earlier, we're going to let some of that we've already done bake and make sure it's been effective in doing the job we wanted it to do. But we'll come back into that space just a little bit this legislative session as well.
I did see there was a shot across the bow from the chairman of tax and fiscal policy the first week of the session talking about the reserves maintained by some of our nonprofit hospitals in Indiana.
Sure.
And it was pretty harsh. Is that where we're going to hear a lot more about that, or was that just the shot across the bow?
Well, I know that's certainly important to Senator Holdman, who wrote that article. And I think it's just still a very important issue for our entire caucus, because health care costs are important for the whole state.
All right. Now, either elaborate or add on as we go
around. Well, you mentioned 13th check, obviously, something. Representative Porter has been a real champion of that, and he's on the co-sponsor of a bill. So I think that will move the session.
And I think the governor has weighed in.
He did as well. Yeah, so exactly. Obviously,
sure bet that may be it.
Raising the minimum wage is something. I mean, it's a whole host of states did that last year or something.
And things that aren't a sure bet, minimum wage. So I thought you were putting that in the sure bet category.
Yeah,
I was going to check my pulse.
I'm going. Let's put it in the sure bet.
Okay. We're talking fantasy land.
And then one more sure bet thing is ballot initiative, citizen-led ballot initiative.
And another not happening.
Okay, one thing, it's something that I think.
This is so people can weigh on an issue such as reproductive
rights. Well,
you
talk about phone calls that you receive. I received several phone calls because our neighbors in Ohio that just recently went through this issue of being able to vote on this in this particular case, the issue of abortion. But there's others, whether it's independent redistricting. We've seen Michigan do that. There have been other citizen-led ballot initiatives where they have to collect they have to meet the threshold of number of signatures. You and I, Todd, just can't put an issue out there by ourselves. So there's difficult thresholds that you have to meet. And I think citizens, man, I've gotten a lot of phone calls on that thing.
Of course,
why can't we weigh on these things?
Citizens that opportunity, you have to, two successive sessions of the General Assembly, you have to pass independent legislation. And then it goes, so it's, to get to that point, there's a little bit more. Finish this out.
Yeah, well, for me, as I always say, I'm always find myself in a defensive posture. This session, I think I'm going to be looking at my local district and making sure that things that happen down the street from Market, where we're at on one end, we tend to be more aggressive on our side of the bill of Market Street to kind of change that. I want local rule to be really local rule. And I want the citizens of Indianapolis, just like I want the citizens of Fort Wayne or Carmel or Martinsville, to be able to do things that and pass ordinance that they feel is best for their people and then leave the state out of it. So I'm going to be in a position where I'm probably going to have to defend some of the things that my colleagues have done over on the other side of Market Street, at the same time represent the rest of the state and make sure that their communities get to do what they want to do, too.
Good place to end. You're all saved by the bell. You won't be asked to come down one way or the other on tenderloin being the official state sandwich. You can keep all sides, all your constituents happy by just you're straddling that one. Keep it up. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate, I know you're busy coming here and talking about the complexities of a short session. Oftentimes it's not less activity, not fewer bits of passion and drama. It's just all compressed, makes it even more interesting, and you've helped us navigate it. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat, and Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of HANA News Service. Ed, is this session going to be as straightforward as that roundtable conversation just suggested?
Oh, yes and no. They'll set out to accomplish little, and they will achieve it. But then they'll proclaim that they did great things, and in fact, they probably will do some things that are important to the people. But I think you heard from the legislators themselves, the leaders themselves earlier, that what we're really doing is setting things up for next year. And, you know, we've seen this rule of threes that you have to go through, you know, hearing about an idea first, and then you say, oh, well, let's look at that the next time, and then the third time is, well, why haven't we passed that? So this is really the first of those kinds of things. But they will probably get sidetracked by some of the social issues. There's a bill on school chaplains, for example, and then there's another bill on alcohol regulation that may really kind of gum up the works here.
So as soon as you talk about education, that opens the door, essentially, for these kinds of
absolutely.
Other issues. And where does that take us, though? Do we, in terms of derailing the process?
I don't think so. And they'll get into things like reading proficiency, which they've talked about, and that's an important issue for them this year. Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, you know, they passed legislation on that in 2023, and you and I are old enough to remember that they used to sometimes let things simmer and see how things worked out. And we remember when it was a bad thing to keep testing students all the time. And this year they're talking about, well, we need testing in second grade and then again in third grade and then after that to make sure that people are reading proficiently. So as a result, you know, you're going to have the same kinds of issues that are raised again, and you're going to get into these same old debates, and again, things may get derailed.
And then finally, are all the cards on the table now? Or we can always count on a little bit of a surprise.
Oh, sure. There's always something that comes up near the end of the session, and I think you also may have a little bit of sparring over Senator Freeman's bills on limiting some of the home rule things in Indianapolis.
I think that's a safe bet. All right. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight.
Thanks, John.
On the next edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll sit down for our annual and, it turns out, final post-State of the State conversation with Governor Eric Holcomb.
It is indeed an honor and privilege to report to you again for the eighth time.
Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.